3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
The House prepares to vote on a resolution calling on the Vice President to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. And the Trump administration is releasing more doses of the coronavirus vaccines. We'll check in on the rollout so far.
It is this huge mass vaccination campaign that's mostly unprecedented. And so I think there's also a recognition that there's going to be initial kinks in the process and that hopefully things will improve as time goes on.
Plus, why Uber and Lyft want to play a part in vaccination efforts. It's Tuesday, January 12th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. The FBI says it has opened more than 160 case files in connection with last week's riot at the Capitol. And the head of the investigation says there could be hundreds more. At a press conference this afternoon, Michael Sherwin, acting U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, announced that a strike force has been assembled.
Their only marching orders from me are to build seditious and conspiracy charges related to the most heinous acts that occurred in the Capitol. And these are significant charges that have felonies with prison terms of up to 20 years.
The FBI is still calling on people to submit photos or video from the event to help them track down participants. And Sherwin says rioters should expect a knock on the door.
Regardless of if it was just a trespass in the Capitol or if someone planted a pipe bomb, you will be charged and you will be found.
Today was the FBI and the Justice Department's first formal briefing on last week's riot. The heads of U.S. law enforcement, Acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen and FBI Director Christopher Wray were notably absent and have not spoken publicly since the riots. President Trump is denying any wrongdoing and defending comments he made at the rally just before the riot, speaking at Joint Base Andrews today.
It's been analyzed and people thought that what I said was totally appropriate.
There has been criticism from both sides of the aisle that Trump's efforts to rile up his supporters about baseless claims of election fraud led to the riot. Tonight, Democrats in the House will vote on a resolution calling for Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office, a step he's unlikely to take. If that holds true, Democrats have said they will move forward with an impeachment vote tomorrow. Speaking at the White House earlier, in his first comments to reporters in several days, Trump criticized those efforts.
We want no violence, never violence. We want absolutely no violence. And on the impeachment, it's really a continuation of the greatest witch hunt in the history of politics. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. This impeachment is causing tremendous anger, and you're doing it, and it's really a terrible thing that they're doing.
Today, Representative John Katko from New York said he would side with Democrats to back the impeachment. He's the first Republican congressman to do so, but GOP aides say others may as well. House Democrats would have enough votes even without GOP support. And at least three Democratic lawmakers who sheltered in a secure room during the riot at the Capitol have tested positive for the coronavirus. Representatives Brad Schneider, Pramila Jayapal, and Bonnie Watson-Coleman say Republican lawmakers in the room refused to wear masks. A video posted by Punchbowl News shows a Democratic lawmaker offering masks to a group of House Republicans who declined to put them on. In a statement, one of those lawmakers, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, says she tested negative on January 4th. 2 days before the riot, and that she doesn't believe healthy Americans should be forced to wear masks. The other Republican lawmakers didn't respond to requests for comment. Coming up after the break, how the vaccination rollout is playing out.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The Trump administration is now releasing second doses of the coronavirus vaccines that had been held back for second shots in an effort to speed up vaccination efforts. The federal government is also urging states to expand eligibility for the vaccine to anyone over 65 and people with pre-existing health conditions. Joining me now with more on U.S. vaccination efforts is Wall Street Journal pharmaceutical reporter Peter Loftus. Hi, Peter. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
So, Peter, we just got new federal guidance to states, but it is ultimately the states that will make these decisions, right? Can you explain that?
What's happened so far is that since the vaccination campaign started in December, initially the high priority groups were healthcare workers, residents of long-term care facilities like nursing homes, and then states were supposed to move on to people 75 and over and certain essential workers that aren't in healthcare, like first responders or food workers. And the plan initially was then after that group, they would move on to anyone who's 65 and over, and then all adults who have high-risk medical conditions. But what's happened now is that we're still in the early phases, but the rate of vaccinations versus the number of doses that have been distributed is relatively low. And so today, federal officials said, we need to start moving on to anyone who's 65 and over and anyone who's 16 and older who has a medical condition that could put them at risk. And so it's a change in plans in the sense that, you know, we still haven't vaccinated everybody who's in those first couple of groups, but federal officials don't want to wait for that to happen before they move on to this bigger segment of the population.
Are manufacturers confident they have enough doses right now to support that expansion?
What the manufacturers have said is that they expect in these first few months of the year to be able to make tens of millions and into the hundreds of millions of doses. But one of the things that's changing as well today is that initially, anytime new doses became available, federal officials would send half of those available doses to the states and hold back half because these vaccines require two doses a few weeks apart. And then they would send that second half of doses a few weeks later so that people could get their second doses. But now what they're saying is they are going to just release all available doses when they're ready and then just count on new and ongoing production to be able to supply those second doses. I also should point out that after that first quarter deadline of 100 million doses of each vaccine, each of them are also then contracted to supply an additional 100 million doses by the summertime, by June and July. And so I think that the companies committing to that much by mid-year at least gives an indication that they expect to have, you know, much, if not all of it, on that time frame, and that should go a long way towards meeting the demand from these, you know, more and more people that are being included on the priority list.
Can you explain what kind of protection recipients get from the first dose? What amount or degree of protection do you get before you have to get that second shot?
In the big studies that tested both of these vaccines, the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, they did find that after the first dose, there was some level of protection. It wasn't as high as if someone had gotten two doses of the vaccine, but for the Pfizer vaccine, for instance, between the first and the second dose, they found that the vaccine was about 52% effective. The finding for Moderna was done on a slightly different basis, so I wouldn't compare these apples to apples, but they found that people who didn't get a second dose about a month later, the vaccine was about 80% effective. And so in both cases, it's lower than if you got two doses because the trials found that the efficacy after two doses was above 90% for both vaccines. So you have to be careful about making those comparisons and also extrapolating those numbers to the broader population because they're kind of based on small subsets of the trial.
So the bottom line, people still have to be sure they get that second shot. Peter, we've talked before about the enormous scale of this vaccination rollout and are hearing of some of the trouble spots as more people are becoming eligible and more doses are distributed. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're hearing about how this is going?
I think the consensus is that it's not going as well as many people had hoped. And the numbers help tell that story in the sense that as of yesterday, I believe, only 9 million people had gotten vaccinated with the first dose, and that was out of about 25 million doses that had been distributed. So we're talking just over a third of the doses that have been put out there have actually gotten into people's arms. And so I think there's some concern about that and why that's happening, and it could be that it's very much related to states having different ideas about who should get top priority to get those initial doses, and states having different levels of how stringent they are in trying to get through the first priority groups before they move on to the others. So there are situations where a state might have a certain supply and they want to get to all the healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents, but it's taking some time. And so some doses are kind of waiting for that to happen rather than to move on to these other groups like people over 65. And so I think that's, you know, those are some of the issues that are happening. But it is this huge mass vaccination campaign that's mostly unprecedented. And so I think there's also a recognition that there's going to be initial kinks in the process and that hopefully things will improve as time goes on.
President-elect Joe Biden has said that getting this pandemic under control is among his highest priorities. What action can be taken on the federal level to support mass vaccination efforts?
Well, it remains to be seen how much they can do to improve things. So far, they've said that they plan to release all available doses, which is what the current administration just announced today. Also, to make available about 100 million doses in the first 100 days of the Biden administration, and to increase the funding that's going out to the states to help support the vaccination campaigns, some of which is already happening now. But that's been an issue, that a lot of the planning was left to the states, but the states have said, we don't have all the funding we need to be able to, you know, set up things like mass vaccination clinics in a parking lot or a sports stadium. And so I think some of those things will help improve the process, the funding to the states, just ensuring that as many doses go out as possible, and just generally trying to help better improve the coordination among the different levels of government.
Wall Street Journal pharmaceutical reporter Peter Loftus, thanks so much for joining me, Peter.
My pleasure. Thanks.
And finally, the ride-sharing giants Uber and Lyft are lobbying the incoming Biden administration for a role in the distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. Both companies have also talked to public health officials across the country about helping to get people to and from vaccination hubs, according to people familiar with those discussions. But there's something in it for the companies, too. Here's our reporter, Sarah Krause.
Yeah, so there's a few different fronts to this. One is this reach out is, you know, we can help distribute vaccines and we're asking that you prioritize our drivers for shots, which could give the public more confidence in riding and in taking ride sharing to their vaccine appointments and elsewhere for that matter. And it could also, as they see it, sort of be a near-term funnel for business and a longer-term way to restart a business that has really severely been hit by pandemic-related restrictions, people not traveling as much, not going to restaurants, not going to see friends, all the reasons you might call an Uber or a Lyft, that the pool of opportunity there has gotten smaller.
And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.